Two Charleston-based acts, one indie folkin collaboration. Singer-songwriters Sean Richardson and Kyle Meadows have come together for a new four-song split EP. And they've even brought in seminal indie rock fellow Ken Stringfellow from the Posies along for the ride. We sat down with Sean and Kyle to talk about their new music, Ken Stringfellow's return to the Mountain State, and, you know, cats. Can you go ahead and introduce yourselves and what you do?
Sure. Hi, I'm Sean Richardson. I'm a singer-songwriter. I also been known to play in a duo called Tofu Jitsu, which is an indie rock band. I also own a healthcare company. I teach people how to save lives. I also book music for a festival. And between those three or four things in my life, most of my time is consumed.
I'm Kyle. I'm a singer-songwriter and musician. I moved to West Virginia last year, and I like to play music. Pretty much, that's all I do.
Well, do you want to go ahead and talk about how you guys met up? I mean, I'm not sure. Have you known each other for a while? How did this new split EP come about?
Kyle was very generous to approach me. I think we met at the Boulevard Tavern. And we had a chance to hear each other play, and we're both between records. And I've kind of been researching how do you stay in the conversation, and splits are not a bad way to stay in that conversation. And Kyle approached me and said, "Hey, would you like to put out a couple of songs? I've got a couple of songs I'd like to put out before I release my next full length." And we set a target date to release this digital record, and we saw it through.
Kyle?
Yeah, pretty much. With the internet and everything, you need to have a lot of content out there for people to be engaged, so I thought it would be a cool idea to approach Sean and ask if he wanted to do a split. I had two songs left over that didn't make it onto the record, and he agreed, and he showed me his songs, and I loved them, and I showed him mine, and it came out, and it received pretty good feedback so far.
It was mutual love.
Oh. Yeah, mutual love.
And the new record you're talking about, Kyle, is the one coming out this June, correct?
Yeah, June 16th.
And that's the self-release, the second release from you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll get to that in a little bit. I mean, you both have established yourselves as singer-songwriters and musicians in Charleston. How did you respectively start music here in West Virginia?
Well, mine was actually formed by the Cousins Five, and that was a grouping of all of my cousins, and we used to practice in my grandparents' garage, and we would put original songs together and dance moves, and then we would come in and entertain my grandparents when their parents would drop us off for a weekend so the parents could, you know, get away from us.
Yeah.
And we just entertained my grandparents, and they seemed genuinely engaged in our performances. And my cousin, she was the lead vocalist and the lead person in the band. I still have this memory of her recording on, she was on the Amtrak train singing Harper Valley PTA. And when
was
I saw
really?
Her standing in the little entryway to the door, it was in South Charleston. I think it was during the bicentennial 76 bicentennial of the United States. And I just thought she was a rock star. She was so styled out. So that's my beginnings. And then from there, I actually was failing a Spanish class in junior high school. And I was really bummed out about it because I wanted to learn the language, but I just couldn't grasp it. And my teacher, she was so beautiful. She was from Spain, and she was just so gorgeous and so helpful. And she came to me one day and she said, "Sean, I feel so badly telling you that you're probably not going to be able to pass this class. You might want to consider transferring." And I transferred into a voice and diction and music writing class in junior high school. And I loved it. We learned to compose and be in front of groups and work on our diction. And that really gave me some confidence. I got into chorus, but then I realized somewhere along the way, I couldn't stand the songs that were being chosen. I wanted to sing The Doors and, you know, Hendrix. And
are you saying you weren't, you couldn't sing that in chorus?
I couldn't get the jazz hands thing down. And it was really, it's too much. And so I think the real death knell to that was when I was asked to sing a duet of The Rose, Bette Midler's The Rose, which yeah. I know all the lyrics to this day. But my girlfriend broke up with me after that performance. I think she thought it was just odd that a man was singing The Rose. And I still remember singing that with Donna Schaefer, wherever she may be today. And then I quit chorus and I started a rock and roll band in high school. And I got to play the songs I wanted to play. So that was kind of the formative years.
Yeah. Now, did all that take place in West Virginia? Or
yes.
Is that, okay.
Yeah. I played music and recorded music. Actually, there's a Mountain Stage connection there. John Kessler, who mm-hmm. lives in Seattle, Washington, was Mountain Stage band director, and he admired a few of the local bands in town, including mine, which is called Strawfish. And Spencer Elliott, who is a local musician now, has taken off soaring. He had a band called Mother Nang. They appeared, my band Strawfish appeared Crazy Jane. That's Karen Allen and Andy Park and Mark Davis. Todd Burge was also included on this release, and it was called The New Music Feast, and it came out in the early 90s. And John just basically funded this record, and we put it out. And he just believed in us, which was a really amazing feeling to have someone come to you at that time and say, I want to make a record with all of you. So in that respect, we all put out two songs as well. So it was really a split. But it was unique. I think we recorded in a studio in South Charleston, like near Gorby's. I think Arnold recorded us. And that was just a really major turning point. We all had planned tours after that. And then, unfortunately, our bass player ended up marrying a vampire. And she wouldn't allow him to play in the band anymore. And then subsequently,
Kyle nodding his head like, yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
I've been there.
I've been there.
Truly. And you think I'm kidding, but on her, she had one of those little tiny black Fieros. And on her vanity plate, it said vampire. And I remember going to my friend's wedding and I thought, you know, this is really odd. I've never been to many weddings at this point in my life, but I don't feel like these two people are going to stay together. It was really strange. And so she shut him down. She said, no more music for you. And then she left him and she went to Florida because she had this inclination to go swim with dolphins.
That's a vampire wouldn't do that.
Isn't that strange?
A vampire would be like, I'm going to go to Alaska, like 30 days of night. I'm not going to go to the sunniest place like in the U.S.
You wouldn't. Yeah, I mean, you can't write this stuff. But apparently, yes, she rolled south and decided it's time to go swim with the dolphins. So they're not together anymore. And that really impacted our band. And we didn't get to go on tour. We found a new bass player eventually. But that was a real downer for all of us.
Yeah.
And but that didn't stop me.
Well, a lot of bands, and then now you're pretty much a singer-songwriter, though you are going, you're getting back together with Tofujitsu, which is your one of your latest
had to
bands.
Do it, really, yeah. Because I have a rock show coming up on May 17th, and didn't want to go in without a lot of volume and punch. And we actually have added an amazing bassist, Chris Allen, who's very, very, very skilled. Yeah, he's going to join us and expand us into a trio for that show. And here's a little side note, is both Chris and I, at different times in our lives, have been married to Karen Allen.
Really?
Yeah.
Not at the same time.
Not at the same time.
Interesting. So a lot of bands, a lot of solo stuff. Kyle, did you start making music as part of a band? Did you start off solo? Did you pick up a guitar and say, I'm going to play this and make this a career? How was your childhood with music?
Well, I've always considered myself sort of shy and introverted, so I never really wanted to be in a band. I much rather play by myself. And I've been playing guitar for a long time. And I recorded my first album throughout 2012 to 2014 and gave it to a few friends and was talked into releasing it. And so I released it in 2015, May 15th, actually. And it went over pretty well. There aren't too many places to play where I used to live in Pennsylvania. And my friend Michael asked me to move in with him in Boone County, and I did that. And he showed me all the spots downtown Charleston, and I just started playing open mic nights, and here I am.
So you were originally born and raised in Pennsylvania?
No, not born and raised, just grew up there.
Just grew up there? So you were born in West Virginia?
New York.
So you were born in California?
New York.
I'm kidding.
Yes, California.
So you're okay. So New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia. That's interesting little turn of
yeah,
of
pretty
events.
Interesting.
Yeah. So how was it being in those two states and then coming to West Virginia?
Well, I moved here. Well, I moved to Pennsylvania when I was 7, and I grew up in Pennsylvania, and then I moved here last year. It's kind of like an on and off thing, like visit, come back, and now I'm here, and I kind of live in the middle of nowhere. I like it because it's quiet, and I prefer it over everywhere else I've lived so far, but you never know, you know, maybe I'll go somewhere else someday.
Now, whenever you tell people that you're not from West Virginia originally, like, you know, me just now, do you get that kind of response of like, what are you doing here? Like, why?
Well, when
here?
I bring up Boone County, they say why? Yeah, why Boone County? But I like Boone County. It's nice and quiet.
Do you think that making music here would be easier, or it's easier or harder than it would be, you know, up in the northern states?
Oh, that's pretty much hard anywhere you live if you don't have your own place.
That's true. Or a farm, or out in the wilderness, yeah. Which you probably wouldn't be able to get in, like, you know, New York.
I would love to just live in a farmhouse by myself.
With, like, a couple dogs and chickens? And
cats.
And cats?
Yeah. Can I come and visit you?
Sure.
Cool. Sounds nice.
That's really sweet. Well, I mean, Sean, you had some experience living in bigger cities.
I did. You know, after the band Strawfish split, I dabbled with a couple of other projects, and I moved to Morgantown and was just spinning my wheels. I was working and trying to figure out if I should go to college and what kind of career move to make. Well, I had one of my dear friends, you know, remember the days of letter writing?
Yeah.
I really missed those times. It was so personable. And my friend actually took the time to write me from Colorado. He decided he was going to explore the West. He had seen all he could see and do in West Virginia. And he was going to ski over the course of the winter, and then he was going to move on to Portland, Oregon. His father had some connections at Lewis and Clark College, so he was going to have a landing pad to see if he could make a go of it. So I received this letter in Morgantown, and he said, hey, I just want to let you know I really, and this is Jay Lukens, he was one of the members of Mother Nang, and he says, I really enjoy playing music with you, and I think you're a fantastic musician. If you ever, you know, want to come out and visit, you have a place to crash. So I kind of kept that as a get out of West Virginia free card. Mm-hmm. And one day I just packed up my Subaru. I came back to Charleston. I visited with my parents for a few days. I think I had $100 in my pocket, and I just started driving west. And I got to Portland, Oregon in about 5 days. And within about 2 months, it's strange, I ended up finding myself opening up a show for Elliot Smith, a little-known musician who had just broken away from his band Heat Miser. And I didn't even know Elliot Smith was a big deal at that time. The first time I had seen him play was at an open mic. Mm-hmm. So yay to open mics. Yeah. He was trying out new material. And I spent 10 wonderful years in Portland and playing with bands like the Brian Jonestown Massacre, the Dandy Warhols. As a matter of fact, Courtney worked out at the same 24-hour fitness that I did. So
that's cool.
I used to sing his songs to him when he would work out. And yeah, he thought he got a kick.
Wonder
out
how
of
that worked out well.
And I just met so many wonderful people, and it helped me to just get a bigger perspective of how music was happening over, like Olympia, Washington, such an amazing place that's produced so much music. I got to see the early days of a lot of bands that have made big impacts. Like, I used to go see Death Cab for Cutie shows, and there'd be 30 or 40 people, and they were relative unknowns.
It's crazy.
You could tell they were destined for some great things. So Portland was a music education. That's really what I embraced, was those types of people that were artistic. You could close your eyes, throw a rock, and hit a musician in Portland. And interesting, a tie-in to Kyle. When I first heard Kyle play, he covered some Elliott Smith songs, and I thought, oh my gosh, it's so refreshing. And he presents Elliott Smith songs with such a sincerity, and really does an admirable job covering his work. And so I knew there was a kinship between us, and yeah, we're from different generations, but, you know, music crosses generations, and it's connected us in a way now that we're able to work together, and it's good. It's nice. I get to see his world as this young little kid, and he sees me from
young little kid. He's not that little or young.
Pretty young.
I mean, Kyle, do you want to talk about how young you are?
No.
He's pretty young, but I really admire Kyle. And you know, his shyness is actually, it's welcoming in a way.
Yeah.
It's because he's not off-putting in any way. He's very approachable.
Yeah.
And, but he's told me how shy he is. You know, he was kind of like, what are we going to do? Are we going to play live on the change of tune? And I said, I don't think so. I think we're just going to talk. He's like, okay, I just want to understand what we're getting into. I tried to send him some lesson plans. I said, I did. I said, now go and study some of these prior interviews that Joni has put up on her page, and you'll get a sense of her interview style. And then
Style is me just talking with a person. And then usually either my dog is brought up, which, you know, happen. I just brought up the dog, so they get a check mark. And then Kanye's usually brought up. And, of course, West Virginia music and just the scene around here. That's usually the lesson plan for a change of tune.
I almost knocked Kanye West over in New York.
Once. Really?
My brother lives in New York, and we were walking. And a very rude, imagine that, Kanye West with attitude was coming out of this hotel. Or not out of a, I think it was a business office, but it looked like a hotel to me. And he just walked like right in front of me. His security detail were just behind him. And I literally had to come to a full stop because he was going to dive into a van and take off to wherever he was going. And I remember thinking, he's pretty short. I could have probably knocked him over. And I'm so glad my instincts stopped me just in front of him. Who knows what his security guys would have probably would have wanted to rough me up. But
probably. I mean, it's almost like a Donald Trump sort of thing. Like if they imagine something's going to happen, they're going to like rough you up first.
And yeah. So I stopped in my tracks.
Yeah. Good instincts. I appreciate his creativity. His attitude is another thing entirely. But, you know, that's that comes with the territory of what he's doing. But which is why I like talking to local musicians, just because you don't really get that. You know, you all have had to work your way for years and years and years, especially in your case, Sean, like years and years and years in the scene. And you may never get to the point where you're becoming the death cab for Cutie, you know, Legacy or Elliott Smith. But at the same time, you're establishing yourself and you're building humility and just respect along the way, which is nice.
I tell people all the time, build a body of work. That's the most important thing you can do. Don't talk about it. Don't do it. Get in the studio, record. Yeah. It's the reward. It really is. And the thing is, everybody's listening for the next big song,
something that catches them.
So we really don't know where it's going to come from. That's one of the best things about art, is it chooses its audience. If it connects, it connects. And if if you get that moment in time, soak it up.
Yeah.
Precious.
So, Kyle, both of you were really mentioning like the smaller venues of like, you know, places in Charleston you would start making music. What are your thoughts on like West Virginia venues or making music here in particular? Like what have you experienced?
I wish there was at least one bigger venue here. What's the biggest one? Is the Clay Center?
Probably.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all the places to play are kind of like right in the same area, which is great, but I feel like if there were just a few more that were somewhat bigger, it'd be easier for like touring bands to come here and actually play instead of you having to go to Pittsburgh or Richmond or something like that.
Yeah. Did you get started, Kyle, playing music in the smaller venues like that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The coffee shops, the bars.
I only really started playing music live here.
Oh, okay.
I've only been playing live for a short period of time.
So, interesting. So you didn't even get to really play in like Pennsylvania or New York, because that was way back then. But
yeah.
Okay.
I played at the Chameleon Club in June of 2015. I opened up for the Secret Sisters. That's pretty much the only place I've played that's sort of known in Pennsylvania.
And have you played anywhere else around West Virginia beyond Charleston?
Nope.
Okay.
Just the Empty Glass, the Boulevard Tavern, Taylor Books, and the Blue Parrot.
Okay. Is there a reason why you've only done those venues?
I don't have a lot of money.
That's a good enough reason. Do you think then that maybe if venues were to offer you all a little bit more money for you to come play, that would be a little bit more rewarding and you'd be able to move around the state a bit more?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sean?
I think what I found are the house show circuit is kind of my new favorite way to go with live music performances. Hmm. It's intimate. These hosts, for example, there's a gentleman named Dusty Segretto who puts on the Living Room series in Louisville, Kentucky, and I played last weekend and made more money there than I would at any venue. It was incredible. Played with a wonderful musician out of Chicago named Jennifer Hall, and Noam Wallenberg, who is an engineer at Rax Studios in Chicago. And so this circuit exists and people are starting to connect the dots. So you can run a tour nationally now and never play an actual venue. But that intimacy is so key because it's a listening room. I actually started up a house show concert series, and I'm on show number 4 now, and I love it. You can hear a pin drop. People are like tippy-toeing whenever they need to get up and leave the room. And sometimes in these live music venues, it's just an X factor. You know, you may have a cluster of people who are coming and celebrating a bachelor party, a birthday. And no offense to them, they want to celebrate. That's an open forum. But as quieter solo singers, songwriters, you do feel like sometimes you may just be the afterthought. And so I'm all about this circuit. Now, how many people show up to those? 30, 35 people.
Yeah.
So it's not a huge group. But when they're all crammed into a tiny space, that intimacy feels very good. And so I'm leaning more towards that. And you had said kind of earlier, you know, kind of alluding to how do you define success, I think is what you were kind of saying to me. And it's always been for me to work with other artists. I love booking musicians. I love lifting that person up to get them exposure. But on this split, back in January, I wrote a song that appears on the split called Deceiving. And I heard it in my head and I thought, wow, this needs an organ part. And who's going to play organ? Who can I find? And I thought Bob Thompson at first. I think I even approached Bob. I found him out somewhere at like a, it might have been like a Big Lots or something. I don't know. And I was like,
he likes Big Lots.
And so last year I brought Ken Stringfellow from the Posies, Big Star, REM. He came to Charleston and on this record he put out called The Record with Holly Munoz, which was an homage to Willie Nelson's 75 Redheaded Stranger. He has an amazing Hammond B3 organ track near the end of the record on it. And I thought, oh, Ken can play. And he played some piano at the show in October at the Fireside Bar and Lounge. And he's such an amazingly multi-talented instrumentalist. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to send this track to Ken Stringfellow and say, hey, man, will you give this a listen and consider recording? And he was in France actually playing Figure Eight with a bunch of musicians over there, Elliott Smith's album Figure Eight.
Yeah.
So there's that weird feeling when you wonder if you're going to get that email back that says, you know, thanks for sending this to me. I don't think this is going to work, but
or
I
an
wish
email
you
at
well.
All. Yeah.
Or anything at all. Yeah. Well, Ken's actually very personable. He doesn't, his ego is very much in check. He's a very humble person. I think he knows how difficult it is because he's been in the business for so long. So he's very thoughtful in that respect. I knew it would be a kind, you know, decline. But much to my surprise, he messages back and says, yes, I think I can do something with this. And I'll tell you, then there's this whole other shift in the mind where you go, I wonder if the track's going to be good enough to use. What if I have to say to Ken Stringfellow, that was a good effort, but I don't think I can use your track.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. He absolutely killed it. And he now, I have him as a featured artist on a song. So to me, those are the ways that I define success in my music career. I am not that guy that really wants to be in front of 60,000 people. I am this quieter person, similar to Kyle. I think that's why
Kyle
we
just
connect.
Shook his head like, no, never.
Yeah, it's not us. You know, we can just chill and enjoy smaller intimacy with our friends. Yeah. And hey, world, I have recorded a track with Ken Stringfellow, and I am over the moon about it. It's the craziest feeling. And through all of these connections, the Posies are coming to Charleston, West Virginia. I still see posts every day pretty much. I go, what? Wow, the Posies are coming. Yeah, they did not skip West Virginia on their U.S. tour. And that's because when they came here, I wanted to let them know how much it meant for us to host them. He stayed at my house. He ate chips and salsa. he actually, the next day, surprised me. He and Holly got up and I looked at them. They had tennis outfits on. And you know those old knee-high socks that people had? The cool knee-high socks. He was sporting those bad boys around. And I sent them down to the Edgewood tennis courts to smack some balls around on the court. And I remember looking at them, and I was like, this is so surreal. I cannot believe.
The Posies are playing tennis in Charleston, West Virginia.
I'm just blown away. So you just have to keep working and see where it leads you to. You can't define where your path's going to take you.
Yeah.
You just, I think good attitude really goes a long way in this music business thing.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I mean, those collaborations, those contacts you keep over time. In my case, when I started in college radio, I kept the same contacts that gave me music each and every week that I would play on radio up until today. And I mean, up until, you know, how many years from now? And those contacts have got me in touch with great people and, you know, people that could potentially be on Mountain Stage or come to West Virginia. It's, you keep up with those great people, and then who knows what will result from that. And especially you two. I mean, you're collaborating now, kind of collaborating in the split. And then who knows, like that connection then could go over time to the point where maybe you all are on a tour, a living room tour.
The lullaby tour.
That'd be so cute.
I certainly plan on sharing Kyle's music with everyone whom I come into contact with anywhere, even this opportunity to get into the international music community circuit in England and Scotland. I told Kyle yesterday, I said, you know, everything's going that direction. We're connected now.
Yeah.
So any way I can share his music with everyone across the planet, because I believe in Kyle and I like Kyle. That really goes a long way for me, is to be able to actually like the person. I can work with people I don't like, but, you know, there's a grit.
It helps when it's nice. And
it certainly does. Yeah, we get to share the ball more and, you know, slam dunk and cool passes. And that's the way we work together. We communicate all the time.
Oh, friends.
Friends.
Pretty
friends.
Much.
Music friends.
Yeah.
That's so cute. When you guys were making or deciding upon the split, what other decisions were made, like part of that? Like, did you have to think about the album cover? Did you have to think about what songs were going to be on the record?
I only had two songs left over, so they were going on no matter what. And were your songs old, new?
No, they're both very new. Kyle created the artwork, which I really love the artwork.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me a little bit of like the Flintstones or something. It's got this angularity to it, but it's bold. It's in your face.
Yeah.
It kind of, and it's a self-titled record, Kyle Meadows and Sean Richardson. Mm-hmm. So pretty easy to find. I love that.
But who decided upon Kyle Meadows and Sean Richardson? Why not Sean and Kyle, or Sean Richardson and Kyle Meadows?
Well, he asked me to join, and I think that's the polite thing to do.
That is true.
Yeah, he asked me to be a part of it.
It wasn't like an arm wrestling sort of match for
you.
No,
and we winner. Would just be a stalemate. We're both pretty weak. I don't think we could really force an arm down. Plus, we don't want to injure our arms, and we wouldn't be able to play guitar.
Money makers, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, Cal designed the artworks. As far as song choices, one of the songs is absolutely really brand new. As far as this year, it was written shortly after the new year, and that's the song Afraid to Die. And that's actually a song told from perspective of a 22-year-old young man whom I was able to whisk away from danger in Charleston. He was living a very bad existence. He had been imprisoned at 22. He'd already spent 3 years in prison, and he'd found himself in a bad house where people were doing bad things, and he realized he didn't want to continue to go down that pathway. And I just asked him, where do you live? And he says, well, my mom lives in Huntington, and this is on New Year's Eve. So I won't tell the whole story. Long story short, I said, I will take you to your mother's house to get away from these people right now. And he didn't believe me. And I said, no, it's going to happen. This is going to happen. And when he realized I was telling him the truth, he started crying. And it was a sincere, full-on cry. And I would imagine to this day, he is still telling that story. So I wanted to, through our conversations, I was able to write a song from his perspective. But, you know, to keep his identity secret and preserve that integrity, I've often kind of hoped that he might hear that song one day, though, and say, you know, there's good in the world. I just wanted to help him out, and I was in the right place at the right time. So that song is told from this young man's true story.
And that song is Afraid to Die.
Afraid to Die, which leads off the record. So, and I'm really, you know, I see these kids, they're really troubled now. There's so much indecision, and they can get into some bad stuff. And I'm not that young kid anymore, so I think I make more sound judgments, but it's my responsibility. You know, I need to play a role, be a positive force. And I know how tough it can be for these guys. They just are trying to get some traction, figure out what to do with their lives. Can you imagine how tough it can be to have already spent three years in prison, and you're trying to just gain employment? You know, it's not easy.
It's even hard for people that do have employment, you know, if they're trying to seek it and they're not in jail. Like, yeah. It's like, oh, you actually have to have 2 years of experience. Well, how can I get experience if you won't let me have experience?
It's such a ding on their credibility. And I understand that. But people do need a second chance. Yeah. And I think that came up in the last legislative session and was almost passed. So people could find that footing again and have pride in themselves. Know that, yeah, we've all made bad decisions. That shouldn't penalize you from being able to lift yourself up and move forward. So that's what I was able to do for one night in my life, is help one guy out.
And then it became one song.
And it became a song. And that's how we process. I'm sure Kyle feels the same way. I mean, sometimes we have these experiences. We don't know how to, I don't go to therapy. Music is kind of my therapy. I just have to grab my guitar and say, you know, on Lost My Way, which is the last track on the record. I love that track. And it's, I swear, I put it on repeat sometimes. And 30 minutes of my life passes. But it seems like it's such a desperate song of someone. And I don't know all the details. I'd love to hear from you, Kyle, as to what that song means to you.
I don't even know anymore. I wrote it in high school. It's an old song.
What do you think what was going on around high school that kind of brought up the songwriting for it?
Honestly, I don't remember. I mean, you can make it be about whatever you want to make it be about, but as far as what I was feeling at the time, I don't remember what it was about. Probably a girl, maybe. I don't know.
Well, what about the your first track, Kyle, off the split, Well, Well, Well? Do you know with that one? Or talk about the songwriting for that.
That one, yeah, that one was more about just a fake person trying to fit in with people that person shouldn't have been messing with. The first line, well, 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 look at you making friends like the new kid in town. You know, he should be hanging out with different people. That's pretty much what that one's about.
I think we've all kind of felt like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and when this is also an old song. It didn't have any drums, it didn't have bass, it didn't have any electric guitar. It was just an acoustic song. And I just, over the years, kind of added more things to it until it got to where it is. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is cool. It's a little out of my element, but I thought it turned out pretty well, so I put it on there.
And you did all the instruments yourself? Like, that was entirely you?
Yeah, the drums are programmed. I didn't play the drums, but I programmed them. But yeah, everything on there is me. Yeah,
the production value is great. When I first listened to it, and I'll be honest, like, I didn't know anything about you until I saw Sean share something on his Facebook about a single that was getting some press. I was like, I have no idea who Kyle Meadows is, but his work is great for me knowing nothing about him. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. So that's, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's just crazy. It's always nice being able to find, or like listen, like what Sean was saying earlier, it's always nice to be able to listen to someone and think, wow, like that's great. I'm part of something, like a music discovery experience. Mm-hmm. So it's great.
I haven't told Kyle this because we're still discovering things out about each other, but I'm actually a drummer transformed into a front person. Maybe one day we'll collaborate too, and I'll back you up on drums and, you won't have to rely on the digital technology. I'll hit some actual skins. So I don't think you knew that about me either. No. But when I lived in Portland, I actually fronted, I was the drummer for three different bands at one time. And I tell you what, that's the hardest job in a band, in my opinion. Every night you're working.
Yeah.
And but I had this awesome band called Acacia, and they were three women, and I was the drummer, and they were the most dedicated, regimented professionals I think I may have ever actually worked with.
Sean, how many bands have you been in?
Oh, I'd say at least it goes around 10 or so different combinations. Even did a comedy band called Rabid Platypus at one point, which was just silly lyricism with my good friend Alvy Kaczynski.
Have you been a part of these name band like band names? Have you had a role in naming them?
Oh my gosh, yes. We would all take a piece of paper and we would just write down our ideas. And the best part about that is you just laugh. You can't help it because it just goes way off the rails.
Yeah.
And it's such a blast. And you know, you end up with one. You can't have more than one. It's not going to work. But the process to get there is a really fun process. I love the name Tofu Jitsu.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up too, Tofu Jitsu.
Karen Allen, total credit for that. And, you know, Karen's an amazing musician. She's the drummer in that band. She's been on Mountain Stage twice as a vocalist and quite an adept vocalist. But she decided she wanted to play drums. And she saw my 63 Slingerland kit when I came back from Portland. And she goes, "Can I play your drums?" I was like, "Of course you can play my drums." And much to my surprise, she was just tearing the drums up. I was like, wow, these new discoveries.
I did mention Death Cab for Cutie and Elliott Smith, and I've heard Bright Eyes brought up in comparison to your all's music. Did you bond over those artists when you were getting together?
I think we knew that without having to say it instinctively. We both, that's kind of the best thing, though. Music can be instinctual, and it doesn't necessarily have to require a bunch of words as much as Kyle just saying, "Hey, you want to put out a split?" We didn't have to think about it. I think we both knew when we heard those tracks that they were going to probably coalesce together and...
Yeah. When I first heard Sean play, he reminded me of Sufjan slightly.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, maybe he likes other music that I'm into. And then he told me he opened up for Elliott Smith. And I was like, that is very cool, too. And we do share a lot of similar musical interests. So it was kind of just right off the bat.
Sufjan's amazing. I got to see him at Lincoln Center.
Really?
Open up, played in a 502-seat venue. Lincoln Center has multiple stages, but this room's called the Allen Room, and it overlooks 66th and Columbus Circle. So the whole back wall are giant glass panes. It's kind of an unbelievable room, and I had went ahead and forked out front row seats. I wasn't messing around. I think I paid almost $500 per seat. But there's just sometimes in life you have to just do something.
Yeah.
And he came out on stage by himself and he played Casimir Pulaski Day. And then 17 other people filled in on the stage and it was a blur of just bliss. I was blown away. Now, the really cool thing is I flew out of New York to Portland, Oregon the next day. And I saw him the next night at the Crystal Ballroom in Portland. So I could go out and see all my friends and just thought, well, obviously the universe has given me a gift to do this two nights in a row, see my friends. And it was interesting. The show in the Crystal Ballroom was not as dynamically pleasing to the ears. And when I thought about why, I think the stage at the Crystal Ballroom is a little tighter and trying to fit that many people on stage and get the proper separation, there was a lot of bleed in the instrumentation. So it was just interesting perspective for me to gain and see how different rooms can affect, definitely can affect an artist that puts that many people on stage at one time.
Yeah. Well, of course you've done so much work with bands and you've done the Living Room Concert Series and you've also helped a festival in booking acts. Sean, what advice do you have to folks that are wanting to be booked, that are wanting to play these like summer festivals or wanting to get out there?
What a great question. I'll tell you one thing is put the link to your music right up front in the body of your email because we all want to know what you sound like. Some people are excellent writers. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't tell me if I'm going to be able to fit you in on a particular stage that is calling for a certain number of players or that style I'm looking for. So let me know what you sound like. I want to see an electronic press kit as well. I want to know who's in the band, how many, what your stage set's going to be. I want to see a biography. I want to know where you come from. But mostly it's let's get that link to the music up right away, folks. Because sometimes people try to sell you on a bunch of words and you go, well, sure, you can write, and sometimes they can't write so well, but they still try, and it's disjointed. And be polite. And it's interesting. I've been sending out accept letters for festival, and I had to also send out the rejection letters. But a lot of artists have been surprised to receive any correspondence from me at all regarding the gig they didn't get. So that means so much to me, because I haven't gotten the gig when I've applied to play certain venues or events. And I remember one time I was in a contest at the cultural center there. I think it was billed as a guitar, you know, slash contest, but I'm not really the fingerstyle guitar player guy, like
Spencer earlier. Yeah.
Well, so I go up and I play my song, and it's one of my songs off of, it's called World Gone Mad. It's off of my July release, which the record's called Condenser. And I played, and I thought, well, I think I covered that pretty well. And at the end of the show, I can't remember who announced the winner, but I remember we're all on pins and needles, and they said, and the winner is Sean. And I got a little tingling sensation, like at the top of the roller coaster ride, Sidnor. And he's a fantastic musician. He's in Byzantine. He's an amazing bassist.
Oh, yeah, him.
But Sean Sidnor can also play the heck out of a guitar. And so there was that deflated feeling. Now, redemption. I go to walk out of the theater, and one of the ushers, nice, sweet little lady, she comes up to me, and she grabs me by the arm, and she goes, honey, I just want to tell you, I think you should have won. Aww. I liked your song. And I thought, sometimes that's all it takes, is to know you connected with one person, and it's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just be thoughtful when you approach these, contests, or you're looking for stages to book or venues to book. Somebody just posted, I think it was Ian Thornton. I'm a huge fan of Ian Thornton. He is one of my favorite people in the music community, and a great bass player himself. He took the time to post like 13 things you can do to get the gig. And I looked at that and I thought, these are very sound bits of advice. So if you Google 13 things to get the gig, I bet that will probably come up in a cache somewhere.
Yeah.
But study that formula. Understand what, is being looked for. And you probably find you're getting more gigs than less.
Yeah. Well, this summer, I'm planning on doing a 30-day series of interviews with West Virginia folks. And so in those, I'm hoping to do one with the V Club and 123 and the Empty Glass, just to get their perspectives of, how do they decide, or how do they pick the artists that come in and, like you all, like, how do they pick you, or how do they pick someone else to come in and play music that night? Because it's interesting just to see, like, what's the process? Like, what information should people know in order to really succeed in getting on that stage?
I took your advice, and I've shared it with others, too. You mentioned, it's probably been a year or so or more, you had said to an audience once that you were describing breaking into the music scene. It was a nice form you put together, the Boulevard Tavern.
The Daring Festival last year, yeah.
And I remember you said, and it really stuck with me, you said, absolutely submit your music, but target your music to the proper stations.
Yeah.
Understand whom you're submitting to and be patient. Don't beat the door down, because we will get to your track eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean you're always going to hear back, but be patient. And I thought that was really sound advice. Is do a little research. Know where you're sending your music to.
Hoping legends stay that way. A failed William Tell in a private gambler's hell. Squirrel versus snake. It only hurts when I'm awake.
We didn't really get to talk about the Sean, the upcoming Posey show, and so that's happening in just a few weeks. Correct?
Oh my gosh, it's so exciting. So let me explain that a little bit. I've seen a couple of posts. I think one of the more revered musicians in our valley or communities, Bud Carroll. He's been very successful. American Miner was one of his projects. He's a great engineer. I think he's working with Jeff Ellis. Mm-hmm. He's worked with so many musicians. I hope to record with him one day. But he had posted something about, the Posies are playing Black Sheep, Burritos, and Brews in Charleston. What? How did that happen? And why that venue? Well, Ken and I communicated, and he said, we want to play non-traditional venues. One option was a house show, but my house show concert series doesn't allow for the size group that's probably going to show up to see the Posies.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of Patrick Guthrie, who owns the V Club and both Black Sheep Burritos and Brews in Huntington, respectively, and in Charleston. And I really love what he does with V Club. I think that's my favorite music venue in the entire state.
It's a pretty nice one.
Yeah, they've nothing done a good against job 123 Pleasant Street. Yeah. It's pretty awesome, too. And I love my local Charleston venues as well, the Empty Glass and the Boulevard Tavern in particular. And I love the Blue Parrot. But anyways, non-traditional venue. Start thinking it through. And they have the stage there. And what we're going to do is remove all the chairs and make this a standing.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be standing room because we want to fit in as many people as possible. And I just know somebody would arrive early, anchor down at a table and go, "You're blocking my view." Well, that's not going to happen. I love that Black Sheep also brew their own beer. They have great food. Mm-hmm. So, and it's also a venue that we can have an all ages show in because I hope that young people will come and experience this. And so let me give some credit to Jeremy Serwer. I haven't mentioned his name. How did Ken Stringfellow and I ever make connection? Jeremy was a friend of a friend in Portland, a very dear friend of mine named Megalito Artugue. Mm-hmm. He lives in Australia now, and I played drums in his band, so there's one of the 10. So Jeremy used to play shows with us, too. He's a singer-songwriter. He moved to Seattle, Washington. Ken is from the Washington state area. And so Jeremy messaged me last June or July and says, "Hey, Sean, do you think you might be able to host a tour of Ken Stringfellow and Holly Munoz? And they want to play West Virginia." Well, yes, please send them my way. Ken had never played West Virginia. He went to market off of his list of states to play. So that was his first time playing in West Virginia.
Of all the years that he's been out producing things, and he's never,
And he referred to us as West Virginia, not the western part of Virginia.
That's nice.
And we made that happen thanks to Jeremy Serwer. And then from the experience Ken had, he actually had mentioned Mountain Stage. And he said, "Ooh, it'd be really cool to get the Posies on Mountain Stage." Yeah. So let's not discount that potentiality in the future. But this tour that they're on in Europe was going to see them back in the U.S. And they had dates they wanted to put together. And I guess Pittsburgh is the show prior to our show in Charleston.
Yeah.
And then they go to Nashville and then to Chicago. And what a wonderful thing not to be passed over. We just put it together and I started to look at whom should I ask to play on this show. Quiet was just a no-brainer for me. They've been working so hard. They just put out a new record, which mm-hmm. sounds fantastic. I love their energy. I also wanted to get Spencer Elliott involved because really, let's just face it, you can combine probably every musician, every band in West Virginia, and you will not come up with 1 million plays on YouTube. What a remarkable feat for one man to have that much of a reach across the globe. He's selling his sheet music everywhere. And he's on Candy Rat Records. Mm-hmm. No slouch of a label at all. And then, of course, I was going to play solo. And I started thinking that over. And I said, no, this is a rock show. We have Spencer playing his style. I contacted Karen Allen and I said, "Would you like to play, put a Tofu Jitsu set together?" We hadn't played since December 19th, 2014. I put together a benefit concert for one of our friends named Jimmy Beasley, who had a tragic, violent experience downtown as a bouncer. And everybody in the valley knows Jimmy and loves Jimmy. That was the last show we played. And you know who played on that show? Ona. I love Ona.
Really?
And you know, they played for free. They wouldn't take a single dollar for that show. And I fell in love with them even more that night because they just wanted to come and contribute. And I was trying every which way in the world to get those guys some recognition in Charleston.
That's sweet.
I love them. And I think you may have seen my post too, the new Netflix ad on the opening
looks
screen.
Looks like Bradley
I
Jenkins.
I swear I keep seeing Bradley every time I open that page. So the show has come together and I kind of goofed though. I have to admit, I didn't realize it was going to be a pop-up show that was going to be announced like 24 hours before the show, and I just blurted out to the world,
really?
Black Sheep Burritos and Brews.
Because the ticket that you gave me, it says pop-up show to be announced.
Yes.
But then when I saw everywhere online that it was Black Sheep, I was like, I don't know what's going on. I'm just going to assume it's still Black Sheep.
Man, I so blew it. I messaged Ken and I was like, Ken, I guess sometimes we got to take our medicine. I said, I am so sorry. He goes, it's no problem. He goes, let's just sell tickets. And so at eventbrite.com, advanced ticket sales are strongly encouraged. There's been a great, great response to the show, and as there should be, the Posies are coming.
I don't know if a pop-up show would have worked as well. Because need, here in West Virginia, like maybe if you're in New York City or if you're in Seattle or Portland and you know, like you're so in tune with what's going on, you know within 24 hours you're going to attend a show. But here, like you need some advance. Like so many people, like you said, have talked about like the Posies are coming to Charleston. Yeah. Like that so much buildup is going to help the event. 24 hours in advance, I'm not sure if that would have helped so much.
I agree. So it was just a mistake that turned into an advantage.
Yeah.
And but I did. I felt like, oh, head buried in hands.
You did
it. What have I done?
Good favor. A big favor for them, because that's the kind of thing. And you knew last time when Ken came in with Holly for a show in Charleston, you know, you really have to promote that kind of thing in order for the band to feel like, okay, I want to come back here again.
Absolutely. And I had met their guarantee when they came to Charleston. I was able to offer them a place to stay. We had great conversations after the show. It all goes by so quickly.
Yeah.
And then they're gone. But, you know, again, bringing it back to somebody like Patrick Guthrie, who's really admired for all the hard work he puts in. And you know what? Here's the validation for me. I'm sitting with Patrick at Black Sheep. We're discussing our plan. And he goes, Sean, if you ever want to put a show together at V Club, you have my permission to do so. And I know that's the kind of stuff that keeps me going strong.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a fantastic show. The Posies on this tour are touring off of their 8th album release, which is called Solid States. I think they've put out a second single from the record now. The first single is called Squirrel Versus Snake, and it's a really well-produced, amazing song about the age of doublespeak that we live in now. So the lyricism is off the charts. Very, very pertinent to the times we're living in. And John Auer is also the other member of
band.
They lost their drummer, Darius, last year, tragically, way too early. So I think it's, I want to say Tony Siragusa, I think, is playing drums in the band. I think I got that right. Sorry if I'm wrong on
that
one.
It's okay. I can edit it out.
Yeah. But they've been doing great things, and they're just about ready to fly back over to the U.S. and kick off the U.S. leg of this tour. So it's going to be a fantastic night of music, and we'll start early. We're going to get this rolling at like 7 o'clock, doors at 6:30.
Yeah.
And we will have some tickets, if there are any left available at the door, but there really isn't any reason not to sell this one out, everyone. I think they sold out 3 LA shows so far with the fourth added.
So go ahead and add West Virginia to the list.
Let's do it. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's show, you know, the world that we understand what great music is. I mean, he's kind of like indie rock royalty.
Yeah. Oh, man. He's worked with so many. I mean, you know, R.E.M., Big Star, Damien Uraldo, like all these different people. It's insane.
He's credited with recording on over 200 different records.
Right.
His dad was, I believe, a Hollywood producer in the movie industry. I think I got that right. So he has grown up around the entertainment world, and he's such a pro.
Yeah.
So I just wish Holly Munoz was going to be able to come along too.
Well,
because
that's okay.
She's so wonderful.
Next time.
Yeah.
One at a time.
Yeah.
Well, so there's so many things on the horizon. And Kyle, of course, you do have the new record coming up for you in June.
Yes.
It's self-titled. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Like, what's the record going to be like? What can we expect from it?
Well, I released 2 singles so far. The first one in February called If Only I Knew, and the second one in March, Low Time Call. They're pretty much every song is going to have that feel and that vibe to it. Self-titled, I wanted it to be a more personable album because it's a self-titled album. So there's no drums, there's really not much going on besides me singing acoustic guitar and a little bit of electric guitar here and there. Kind of melancholy, but it's got some pop sensibilities in it also.
Great. And did you record that at your house? Did you record that?
Yeah, that was all recorded at home.
Okay.
Yep.
That's great that you're able to do that yourself. Mm-hmm. Like that kind of.
I like doing it that way because you're not on the clock in a studio. I can take as much time as I want.
That's true. And also you're your own man. So, you know, you can make the changes you want to your heart's desire and not worry about someone saying, we can't really do that.
Right. Like, that's why I prefer doing it that way.
That's cool. With this collaboration with Sean, moving forward, are you wanting to maybe do another collaboration with someone else that is in Charleston? Or in West Virginia?
We'll see. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head right now. Sean and I got along very well, and we share a lot of musical interests, but I haven't met anyone else that I would want to collaborate with yet.
Yeah.
But maybe there's someone out there somewhere.
Okay, so do you guys have anything else that you would like to talk about with the split, new records, new...
Sean has a new record coming out in June also, I think.
I'm going to put out... I'm a fan of putting out about 5 songs at a time. I think it's more palatable.
People do that more and more often. You know, the singles. Like, there was a band on Mountain Stage recently. They just put out a single per month. That's it.
And, you know, I have a friend who put out a 14-song release. And in hindsight, he saw my 5-song release last July. And he says, you know, I don't think people are going to actually consume my 14 songs. I'll never be able to put them out as a first time again. He goes, I think from now I've got to write all these new songs. And I said, well... You know, here's the thing. There's no real formula anymore. Do what you want to do and just stay in the conversation. What I'd like to do with Kyle, which we haven't even started to talk about this. I'd like to go on a tour with Kyle because we're very easy to load up the two of us and a few guitars.
Yeah,
and,
I was going to say.
It's really not going
to
be overwhelming.
Unless you have some groupies you want to bring along.
Right. Yeah, I'd like to bring along Alicia Alcudwa to bring her violin because she's so adaptable to any music. And she's started to play a little bit with me as well. But do the house show circuit. Find a couple of venues out there. Keep it regional, local. You know, your Columbus, your Lexington, Louisville, Nashville, Blacksburg.
Pittsburgh.
My brother lives in New York, so why leave that off the list? And it'd be a homecoming show for you, Kyle.
Yeah.
So I think we'll probably at least look at that that possibility, because I'm sure we'd travel well together. But we'd have so much to learn. I don't even know what Kyle eats. You know, I eat primarily a vegetarian diet. So
what do you eat, Kyle?
Rice.
Bowl of rice a day.
Ramen noodles sometimes factor in that. Ramen noodles don't factor into your lifestyle?
No.
Who are you?
I watch my sodium intake.
I thought you were going to say I watch my figure.
Oh. I watch my sodium intake might be the best quote that's come out of this conversation.
Thank you.
Well, great. So do you have any final words or advice or fun facts that you'd like to give us each?
I have a new music video coming out on May 1st. For my 3rd single.
Cool. What shot here or?
In the middle of nowhere, yeah.
Did you shoot it?
Mm-hmm.
What, is there a plot?
No.
Is there a character?
No.
Is there a cat? You have anything about this? There might be a cat.
I don't think that footage made the cut. It's kind of a mix between 3 things that I enjoy a lot. Abstract, old 8mm footage, and maybe it's just 2 things.
The cat was the 3rd thing, but you cut the cat.
But I cut the cat out.
You cut the cat. Okay, so cool. Music video and, of course, the record. Sean, do you have any last words?
Music videos are going to be coming out soon. That's exciting for me. I'm not really a fan of taking pictures or being in videos, so I may find people to play those roles. I may have somebody play me in the music video. I'm a little bit shy in that area. I actually just got together with a photographer to shoot some images, though. You got to do it.
Yeah, it's true.
But, you know, music videos are kind of a big deal now. You need to have them. And other than that, you know, I'm just going to keep looking for opportunities for myself, for other musicians, raise people up where I can, and just keep this good attitude. And I'm in just such a good space. I'm all romantic these days. I'm all happy man. So, yeah, life is good. I don't think I've ever felt so head over heels about someone. I kind of mentioned that to you earlier, but I am, Joni. I'm so happy. And that makes the day just brighter, knowing that your heart's in it. And I have my heart closed for a long time. I actually said to this wonderful person, I may actually write a love song. I don't write too many of those. So got to be in love to write a love song, I think. So I'm a happy man. Thanks for having us. I love spending time with you.
Yeah, thanks for coming in, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kyle Meadows and Sean Richardson's self-titled EP is now available on Bandcamp, and they'll each have full-length releases out this June. Keep up with Kyle and Sean's careers on socials, and hey, give A Change of Tune a follow and like on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. To hear more of their music, tune into A Change of Tune, airing Saturdays at 10 p.m. Eastern on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening. These tracks are broken solitude. I'm afraid.